What is up, friends of the Upstate Golf Guys? We appreciate everyone tuning in. If you enjoy what you hear, we release new episodes every Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us on all podcast platforms. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search Upstate Golf Guys. Hey, I just want to chime in and say one more thing. I hope you guys get a chance to check out the website my wife put together. It's really awesome. It's definitely worth checking out. We have our bios in there. You could find all of our podcasts. And most importantly, where you could get our merch from our awesome Upstate Golf Guys hats with the Uncle Sam logo to quarter zips. We have a lot of different colored golf polos, so you can match the polos up with the hats. Definitely come check us out. And that's at upstategolfguys.com. Thanks again, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Upstate Golf Guys. This week's episode, I have a special guest. You may have seen him on CNN, on YouTube, on social media, your local news channel. I saw he was on a bunch of news stations. He's my hero, man. I wish I could do what he did. Patrick Koenig is here with us. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much. Thanks, guys, for having me on the show. And yeah, I'm a world record holder now, so it's serious business.
That's quite a title. That's not just anybody can say that.
It's amazing. Yeah, I think there are some silly golf records or just world records in general that are a little ridiculous, but this one is awesome. This is, you know, if I were to look at all the world records that you could potentially hold, you know, aside from being the richest man in the world, that'd be a good record to hold. But this is my favorite record.
I think this might be second to that.
Yeah, this would be second to that. You got to have a lot of money to play that many golf courses, and you know,
you need a little help, right? You had a few sponsors that helped you through that along the way, I'm sure.
I mean, not to jump right into the plugs, but it wasn't just me. You know, playing this much golf, it requires a lot of friends and a lot of people that helped me play some of these golf courses that I played. I had friends join in from time to time that rode along for the journey. And then, my sponsors, the whole tour was powered by Golf Gamebook. So that's the app that I lived in day to day and recorded every single one of those rounds in that app. And that was a great way to kind of look back whenever I remember a course. I can just pull it up and see the photos that I took from that round and the double bogeys that I made.
Yeah, you're a photographer at trade. Your pictures are absolutely amazing, dude. They really are.
Thanks, man. I think it comes from like a place of passion. As golfers, we are all very passionate about the places that we play, and we love the sport so much. And so that's kind of where it generated from. It was a desire to take the golf course home with me and share it with other people. And those magic moments that we all know that you find on a golf course, photography is a way to capture those forever. So that's kind of where it comes from. And I think that's why it makes my photos a little bit, they stand out from the crowd. If you really have a passion and an eye for the game and the details that make photography and golf courses stand out. And that's what I love to do.
Absolutely. Brad will tell you, if I didn't have a business that I was committed to, I think I would get into photography because I always have the phone in my hand, always taking a picture of something, always trying to take different angles, like cooler angles of the ball coming to the hole. I have a little passion for it myself, but I'm definitely not as talented as you are.
Well, I mean,
200 yards away from us in his cart, and he'll want to go get it to take a picture of something. And we're just like, Anthony, let this one go. You gotta finish this hole, please.
Well, I mean, that's funny because that's where it started for me. I was just taking photos with, I had a little point and shoot thing that I brought out back, a decade ago or two decades ago, and I would just kind of capture these photos. And sometimes they were, I got lucky, you know, because it's kind of like these things came together that I just kind of knew what I saw. And then, you know, I'd made the conscious effort in 2018 to become a professional and just become the very best that I could at that. And then, so you kind of pick up things along the way. And then there's a certain point where you get, you know, get enough that the courses will hire you to come photograph their golf courses. And I do plenty of golf events and stuff. So it really, it's a dream come true to turn that into a career. It's not easy, as you know, everybody's a photographer these days. So you have to find a way to stick out. And, but it, you know, that's how it starts. I mean, you have an eye and enjoy doing it. And then I'm, you know, I feel pretty lucky every day that I get to call myself a golf course photographer as my primary job. And that's what pays my bills. And I'll do whatever I can to hang on to that title. I love it so much.
Absolutely, yeah, man.
And those golf courses, they're the sanctuary of what we love to do. And they're something that's awesome to take pictures of. I mean, mm-hmm. You couldn't ask for a better subject.
It probably helps you getting on. Well, you're going to have no problem now getting on these courses, but probably help getting on some of the nicer courses, private courses, as a photographer, having the drone, going and approaching them, saying, hey, I could take some awesome photos for you to help promote. Does that help you get on some of the courses or even before this thing? Or?
I mean, some of them, they could care less about you and your photography, but some of them love it. I mean, there's a, you know, so on the tour, I played, you know, 580 different golf courses, about half of those were private. And, you know, a small percentage of people were excited to have me come out and do photography. What ended up happening is I'm moving so fast that I didn't really approach golf courses to say, hey, can I come play your golf course if I take photos? That was not a strategy of mine. You know, most golf courses, they want you to, their members are their primary concern. Those are the people that are, the golf courses are there to serve. And so I would always love to play with a member. And then if I take some photos as I go, you know, on the back end, some of the courses found my photos after the visit and were like, man, we love these photos. We'd love to purchase them. So I gave everybody a deal on my photography efforts along the way and, you know, shared the love. And so not everybody is down to you know, to purchase photographs and some people don't want the exposure, but I always believe that, I mean, here you got these courses, they're spending millions of dollars on this tremendous asset. And the reason that everybody's there is usually the golf course. And it always blows my mind when they don't have consistent photography, you know, of every season and bringing people out there to showcase this tremendous place that, you know, really generates all the revenue for those clubs. So some courses get it and they love to have me out there. And then others, I play by the rules, you know. If you know they don't want any photographs taken, then you know we just play some golf. And so,
You know, that's their loss if they don't want any photographs taken, and you to promote them on your page, man. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. I mean, so you know that's my job. So like, people will pay me to come to their golf courses and capture their course, and you know, some not. So it's you know,
yeah, it's whatever. Do you ever go outside of golf with your photography or like doing like outside work?
Yeah, a lot of nudes. I do a lot of nudes.
I love it.
No, I haven't tried my hand at that craft, but photography is such that I was just having a conversation with another photographer today that you could be a fantastic photographer and then come in and you have all the technical skills and know, you know, all about it. But if your subject is something else, there's nuance within the game, like what is particularly cool about this scene. And if you're not a golfer, you might not pick up on that. And your photograph will show as such that it's just, you've got, it's a niche, you know? And so that's where, I know all the little tricks and details that make a golf photography, stand out. Right. And so, I haven't tried too much else out of there. You know, I do events. So like if somebody will, I photographed the pro-am at Genesis recently, and that was super fun. Got to follow Tiger around and his Sunday Red debut and snap some great shots of the big cat, which is, I mean, it's not always a treat to walk alongside somebody like that and capture what I can. So those are cool moments that, you know, outside of like just course photography, the pros that play the game, I get a chance to capture some pretty cool moments. And then I've done the Dunhill a bunch, which is one of the best tournaments in golf, just period. We don't know as much about it here in the in the States, but it's at the old course. And it's, you got Carnoustie in the rotation and Kings Barnes as well. And the, and those, they have like, it's kind of like a little pro-am, a celebrity pro-am. So they get some great names out there. And I was able to play at the media day with Bill Murray once. So I walked around, spent five hours with, I mean, Bill Murray is, I think, in a lot of people's dream foursomes. And it was a very cool thing to play with Bill Murray. And you know, and just, I didn't take too many pictures. I snapped a couple shots, but there's a good Instagram video of me doing what you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to jump over the burn out there. On the, I think it was the first hole. We started on the third hole, so we were kind of warmed up. And I, you know, I tried to impress Bill by jumping over the moat. And it wasn't my finest jump, but I did clear it. And you know, he gave his approval on the social media video, which definitely.
I don't want to get caught breaking the rules in golf to begin with, but doing it on camera, that's even worse.
Yeah, it was. I don't recommend other. You know, don't try this at home, but I'm going to do it anyways. This sort of thing, and but the old course is, it's, they're not. You know, I mean, there's the rules of the game and you should behave, you know, appropriately. But the old course, I mean, that place turns into a park. It's a community center for that town. And the whole community really kind of rallies around that place. It's much different than a lot of the private clubs that you'll have in the United States, where it's like, that's open to everybody. That course is the identity of that town. And, you know, it's also a great university town, and the university kids come and they get to play it at an amazing rate. And it's what a golf course should be. I think that we don't have as much of that in the United States, because we are, you know, heavy on the private club experience and things exclusive. Like that. But the old course is, if, you know, people are listening and they haven't been, and you're a golfer, I say go and see how, I mean, it changed my life and the way that I, because golf is such a big part of my life that, you know, it had that effect on me to, it changed the way I view golf courses, the things that I find are beautiful, the things that are interesting in the game, and they all kind of sprout from there. You know, a lot of the, I mean, the golf courses of the British Isles were the inspiration for American golf in the very beginning. And so you look at some of the places that we aspire to play on, like National Golf Links and things like that, were brought over by, you know, C.B. McDonald, who said, this is amazing. We need to do this in America. And that's kind of where it all started. So to understand where these things come from and just the history of design, it all started there at the old course. And so, you know, some people that are used to American golf will go over there and say, oh, that course sucks. You know, it's flat, but I wouldn't say it's flat at all. I mean, the undulations on those fairways are inspirational. And some of the best turf in the world to roll a ball around on. And, that sort of thing is, we don't see as much of it in America. They're the only real taste you can get. There's a couple of really cool links courses in America, but the big helping of it is at Bandon Dunes. And I think that's why it was so successful, you know, amongst other reasons, but it pays homage to the origins of our game. And it's just tremendous fun. You know, it's like, oh, this is why golf is great. Not because of, you know, the exclusivity and the private thing, but it's the joy of, you know, golf being as it was meant to be.
Being in nature and being a part of it and all of that. Yeah.
That's amazing, man. So Patrick, when did you decide to start the journey and realize you wanted to break this record?
Well, so it kind of goes back to 2018. I quit my job and bought an RV, and I was like, I'm sick of not seeing these places. I just wanted to see all the golf courses that were kind of popping up on social media at the time. And I was like, man, there's a lot of golf to be played, and I could probably get out and play a lot of these courses. But, you know, the most, you know, like you take a trip, you know, over to the East Coast, and maybe you spend a week and you play, you know, if you're going gangbusters, you play 10 courses. And I was like, there's 150 I want to see over there and probably even more than that. And so I figured the RV was the best way to do it. And away I went. You know, I was self-funded that first tour and time of my life. And by the time I got to, like, I don't know, I was like maybe a 3 or 4 months left on that year. And somebody mentioned to me that the world record was 449 different 18-hole golf courses played in a single year. And I was like three something. I ended up playing 400 courses that year just on my own volition. This is just what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so it always kind of stuck with me. I didn't change my game plan. And my game plan was to play in the lower 48 states on that first tour, which I did. And it was kind of, I just thought about it. And then it was a funny thing because I was thinking about that. And I was like, let's put down like the RGV tour is what I called that first one. You see the flag behind me. Yeah. That's the flag from the first tour. RGV stands for recreational golf vehicle. So it wasn't an RV, it was an RGV. And so that was kind of my first thing. And then I put together this business plan for 2.0 and just kind of had some ideas and figured why not put it down. And then maybe like a month later, Golf Gamebook called me and they came up. They said, you know, you ever think about doing that again? They're looking for ways to expand into the US market and show people the great app they have. And the ideas just started flowing. You know, and after that first call with them, it felt like it was going to happen. And that's kind of crazy to, you know, one call, here's this big idea. And that was like in October. And then we put it all together, bought the RV. And on January 3rd of 2023, I hit the first tee shot at Monarch Beach Golf Links and just didn't stop. You know, I went for it after that. That was just, you know, 18 holes that first day. But then many days of 36, 54, 72.
We did a little bit of the math ourselves and it came out to on average 28 and a half holes per day.
Yeah.
So you made the turn, played nine more, made the turn, played another hole every day for 365 days.
Yeah. There was no days where I would just played nine holes. Cause it had to be a full 18 hole course. That number is a mixture of the, you know, the average, obviously. There was a lot of days of 36, you know, if you're playing 36, you're catching up to the record. If you're only doing 18, you're falling behind. You know, so I was gung ho for 36 and, not too many days of 54 or 72, all those did happen. Only one day of 72. Cause it's, I always tell people that it's like doing wind sprints in the middle of a marathon, right? This was not a month long, a 2 month long thing. It was 12 months. And so I did my best to play a lot of days of 36. And then when there was travel or, it just made sense to just do 18 holes, you know, some of the days in the winter, it was tough. You know, the summer you can get it in 36, no problem.
Right. But longer days.
January, you got to be the first out, and then you can do a different course in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And within distance, I mean, with close enough range where you will get it in before daylight.
So I wanted to ask you, because I think I saw that your lowest score over the year was a 67, and the biggest score that you put in the Golf Game Books app would have been a 91.
Yeah.
Remember a lot about the 91. What happened there? What was that?
You know, I do remember the 67 better, but that's
because I can't relate to the 67. I can relate to the 91. I think a lot of our listeners are the 91 type golfers versus the 67 type golfers. But what happened on that 91?
The 91, I think I woke up and I shot a 74 in the morning. And then the course was a 30. I forget the name. It's a French name of a course just north of Atlanta. And then I played the back nine and my driver was just off and there was 13 penalty strokes involved with that 91. I was just pumped. Every tee ball was just into the trees and then I drop. And you know, that round was interesting because it was really the only time that I kind of gave up almost or like, you know, just like slapping around and I could have got under 90. And that was nice because it was a reminder that, you know, if you think you got your mental game, it can just all kind of go out of control at any point in time. You know, there was 579 courses where that didn't happen, but the one reminded me, hey man, you know, just, it's more fun to kind of grind on it. If I would have, I could have, my 86 was my second lowest score. So, that one got away from me and kind of kicked me in the shorts, but yeah, good, a good 74.91.
Right. That's a good day.
Me, you know, that's my average. I'm a 17.2 officially on the tour I'm on. So I'm mid 80s and 91 at, you know, a lot of times I'm in the 90s, you know.
That's amazing to hear a 91 with 13 penalties. That means you played outstanding golf other than those penalty strokes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I shot 74 in the morning, so like the game was there, but the driver had left me, and the course was such that if I would have been playing that on a different course, I think that wouldn't have happened. But it was just into the trees, drop, and then try to make bogey type day.
That's amazing. Have you heard of the Golf Week Amateur Tour? I know California has a chapter. It's all over the country. But that's what we're in. It's pretty cool. It's I mean, you could go in as a scratch golfer and be in Champ Flight. It's just fun competitive golf, live scoring. Feel like you're in the pros a little bit, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I always tell people that competitive golf is a different sport from recreational golf, which I was playing recreational golf on that tour. So would my low score have been a 67 if there was a scoreboard and other people playing? Probably not. I mean, definitely not. You know, it's a totally different game when you're playing playing against others and, you know, playing by all the rules of golf. That's kind of a different sport. Most guys that play, you know, they'll take a drop and be kind of casual with the rules and still, you know, that I think that's worldwide. People are like, they play for fun. And a lot of times the rules of golf don't promote that. So,
Yeah, it's funny you say that because embarrassingly so, I just learned the difference between a white stake and a red stake starting this tour. The course we play at all the time, Freer Park in Troy, New York, shout out. They did an amazing job over there. I actually have a couple episodes with their super. But the first hole has a road going up. I call it the road hole. My whole life, when I would hit it over the road, I would just drop it where it went over the road and take the stroke penalty. Everybody was like, you know, no, you got to re-tee. Yeah. Go back and re-tee. I didn't know that. I always played that casual rules, you know?
Yeah. I always think that out of bounds is a stupid thing. I'm for advocating, everything should just be red stakes and you can play that drop. It helps speed up the game. And they did kind of do something towards that recently where they said I didn't think it was that big of a thing, but you're allowed to drop there where it went in under the new rules. But you still would incur additional penalty strokes. So you'd be hitting your third shot into there or your fourth shot.
Right. Yeah. It would be one for the drop and then one,
be two penalties
with a penalty. Yeah. Right. So,
yeah. Exactly. So it's kind of a two stroke penalty and you know, this game's hard enough. And if you're pumping them out of bounds, it's not fun. So on the tour as my own, as a commissioner, I played that, all out of bounds was now a hazard. So we played as such. And, that is the commissioner of my own golf tour. I can do those sort of things. And there was also, if people talked back, it was a one stroke penalty. So I was pretty vicious as a commish, you know?
I like it. I like it a lot, man.
We need some penalties like that for you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. This guy always says, funny you said, this guy always says the game is hard enough.
It's hard enough. And you know, some of those rules and the size of the cup drive some people away from the sport. And, you know, I hate to see that. You love to see people enjoying golf and wanting to come out and be a part of it. So yeah, anything that helps the pace of play and increases a chance of some high fives out there, I'm always rooting for those types of changes because that's what we want to do out there. You know, I play with my parents that are in their 70s. I'd love to give them a high five a little bit more frequently because they hit a chip from off the green. If the hole is just a little bigger, that's what I think
it's the hole staying the same size, guys.
never, I hate it.
Yeah, no, there's some crazy rules in golf that I'm like, why is this even a rule? Of course, I think everybody's least favorite rule is the divot, you know, hitting it out of a divot. I mean, everybody says that though, you know, it should absolutely. Why are you getting penalized for hitting a good ball down the middle of the fairway? And it's literally no advantage to move it 1 inch
behind the divot, you know?
I'm kind of on the you know, the fence that I would, you know, sometimes I'll knock it out of there if I'm just playing casually and I'm not really going for that. But there's something to be said about, you know, in golf, that, as in life, you get good breaks and bad breaks. And there's a lot of times you hit a good shot and you get screwed in golf. And that's kind of part of what makes it a special sport, is that it's not always guaranteed success. And there's sometimes where, man, you pump one OB and it bounces off. I mean, I've had many times where you bounce it off a house and then come back in and you save a par or even make a birdie. And so that's kind of a little bit of, that's a little bit of the fun of the game and the rub of the green. And then the trick is to just, you know, when you come up there, you see your ball in a divot and just be like, all right, well, the challenge of recovery in golf is perhaps the most thrilling. So if you put it in that divot and everybody sees it. Oh, and, but then you go after it and dig down and hit one out, hit it tight. You know, you just kind of overcame, the obstacle thrown in front of you. And that's what makes golf awesome, is when you're behind a tree and you pull one, you know, hook one around there to get on the green and manage to save it. And, you know, it goes back to, Alistair McKenzie was a huge fan of what he called the hero shot. And he set up many holes just to make sure that you had the opportunity for glory. Cause that's what thrills us is when you have an opportunity to do something great, recover for something or go kind of beyond and take a risk and pull it off. I think that's a huge part of what makes golf thrilling. And, the good doctor recognized that. And there's many holes that set you up for that sort of opportunity, you know, right off the bat. And, that's why I like my type of golf course is one that's not too penal. You know, if you hit a bad shot, it's not fun to take a penalty stroke and then just play. It is fun to be in trouble, punch out of the trees, and maybe get up and down for par. You're smiling much harder than the guy that hit a good shot into the fairway and, you know, hit it onto the green and two putted for his par. And that's what golf's about to me, you know. Yeah. So I tend to gravitate towards the sort of golf course that will won't necessarily penalize you, but it will put you at a disadvantage for a bad shot and allow for recovery.
Yeah, force you to get creative sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the course you're saying, it's so wide open that wherever you hit your drive, you can get there with your second shot. It's just what club are you going to use and how are you going to get it out of that mess that you got it into?
Yeah,
so yeah, that's good stuff. You leave yourself a chance.
And the good architects we have, there's a lot of them this day and age. They, I think, all recognize that. And they're building courses that sometimes it's good just to, hey, this is the hole where you just hit one. You just got to step up and thread the needle. And, you know, a couple of those holes are great, but you want to have a good mixture. And, yeah, you know, guys like Corin Crenshaw and Dave McClay Kidd and Gil Hance, like the guys that are leading the charge in terms of design, all are kind of on that same sort of mentality. And I love to see it.
So on this tour, what would you say was your favorite course, and then what was your hardest course? Because they could be two different things.
No, they definitely always are. Yeah. Favorite course is Sandhills. Favorite course is Sandhills, without a doubt. That's I just mentioned them, Cor Crenshaw. They call it a modern masterpiece because most of the great golf courses in America are usually, they're historical and older and have that sort of vibe of a historical landmark almost. But this one it was built in recent times, and boy, it's just spectacular. It's got so many great things. Where is that? Sandhills is in Mullen, Nebraska, the Sandhills of Nebraska. So aptly named, and it's spectacular in just about every way that you would rate a golf course, from like the different shot options to the playability, the course conditions, to the beauty of the place. It's challenging, but never unfair. And you know, I got invited by the superintendent out there, which was just it was a dream. And he was nice enough to play. He had some commitments, and he made it work. And he played the front nine with me. And one thing that stuck out to me in that same sort of thought there is that I lost maybe two or three balls, and every ball that I lost, he came up and apologized to me that I lost. Because it's tough to keep it all. He wants it to be a penalty out there. He wants it to be, you know, findable, but he doesn't want it to be, you know, oh, you're in the junk, and now that's a lost ball. So they actively try to thin that out. So, you know, you kind of get that same sort of, all right, you're in the thing. You might get a break, you might not, but you should absolutely be able to find your ball and play it towards the hole.
Yeah.
Did he give you any extra pointers on the greens and the breaks that, you know, he would especially know?
Yeah, I think he would, you know, all those guys are such a treat to work with because they know that golf course. I mean, every blade of grass. I mean, they are. It's not a small effort to maintain a place like that. And most people don't give them the credit. You know, we kind of expect a certain level of golf when we go and play a golf course. And, you know, everything is very difficult. I mean, that golf course is a unique one in the Sand Hills that they have to shut that down. I played October 1st was the last day that they were open. And there's many sunny days and many, you know, 70 degree perfect opportunities to play in October out there, but they have to cover that entire golf course with a layer of sand to prevent the, you know, it gets cold and the winter kill. If that turf isn't covered with sand, there's a pretty good chance that in the spring it comes up and it's dead, you know? And so, you know, every square foot of that, you know, is needs to be playable, and to do something like that is just a huge task that they crush it. And it was just a splendid playing surfaces, and you know, that's a massive effort, and the result is great. You know, if you do it well, amazing. It's just it's a special play. So Sand Hills wins, you know. Shinnecock Hills was in that conversation until I played Sand Hills.
Wow. Okay. And then the hardest.
Well, Shinnecock was very tough. It was very tough. I played pretty well and managed to get up and down and break 80, but I got to go. I mean, I've always found Bethpage Black to just be incredibly gnarly from a length standpoint. And it's never, you never really be like, oh, this isn't unfair. It just beats you up on some of those. There's a good stretch where there's just some long par fours and you got to be hitting good shots. And even if you are, you're still going to find a way to get up and down. I played really well and shot 79. So I give the edge to Bethpage Black, which is cool. It's a course everybody can play. And, that was a fun one. I played it probably three or four times, and that was the first time I broke 80 out there.
Wow. Okay. I can't wait for that Ryder Cup. That's going to be a lot of fun out there. I was talking to Roger, another one of the Upstate Golf guys. I said, we should all start looking into tickets because that would be a really fun, you know, get a whole group of guys, Airbnb a place out there and, you know, spend the weekend.
Just a few hours from us.
Yeah, it's a good spot. That'll be a great place. I mean, the New York fans are rabid for golf, and they're that's going to be, you know, the crowd is going to be a factor and certainly a part of the story on that golf course. And it's a great place for championship golf and, you know, a Tillinghast gem that, you know, a lot of the golden age architects are, you know, they're hidden behind private walls. And that's, you know, that's the people's golf course out there. So I think that it's going to be every time there's a tournament at Bethpage, it always shines.
Awesome, man. So on this tour, did you have any hole in ones or like really memorable hole outs for Eagles? Like what, give me an awesome shot you had.
Yeah, I had a couple good ones. I think the longest I holed out was from 110. We had somebody hole out from 150. Shout out to my man, David Forgan. He holed out from 132 yards and just played it like he does it all the time. That was a good one out at Estancia in Scottsdale. So I remember that one well. I holed out from 110 at Tom Coyne's place out there in your guys' neck of the woods on their second hole. That was a cool one. Tom's just a, you know, if you're a golf fan, you know who Tom Coyne is. Some great books. He's done similar sort of ridiculous endeavors. A course called Ireland, a course called Scotland. And he's working on his book called A Course Called Home, which is the story of him purchasing that golf course and maintaining it and just kind of operating it. And so that'll be glorious because it'll give you an insight into the struggles that you have that most people don't take for granted. So it was fun to kind of get the insight as he's kind of cutting down some trees, and the course isn't, you know, it's not a top 100 golf course and it's got its challenges, but every course can be fun. And, you know, Tom's out there making it as fun as he possibly can. And he's mowing the grass and it was just, he's just such a good dude. And that was a fun hole out and just a fun day with Tom. We played 36 that day out there. And so I love that guy. But the sad story is the hole in one chase. There has been, yeah, zero hole in ones on in my entire lifetime. I'm zero for like, I don't know.
That hurts 60, me. That hurts 16, even me to hear.
16,000 attempts, I think, is the number. But yeah, I've got some good stories about hole in ones that didn't happen. You know,
like really close. I got to tell you about a hole out story real quick. Just a couple weeks ago, we were playing at our local course that's open all year long here in upstate New York. It's a dump, but we go there as soon as spring breaks because we're all crazy and we're itching to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So there was eight of us, and it was the back nine. It was a 10th hole. I tee off, Roger tees off, the other guy tees off, Mikey that's with us, and the other four come pulling up. He starts chatting with the other four. We're all buddies, whatever. He gets in the car and drives. We get out there. We're in the fairway. He's looking for his ball. And he goes, all of a sudden, I found my ball. It was in his pocket. So we're playing a casual round. He forgot to tee off.
I was talking.
Yeah, I've done that.
So we said, just throw it out in the middle of the fairway. It was a par five. Throw it out in the middle of the fairway next to ours. Hits a second shot. I was right next to him. We're both about one. I was like 110 and he was 100 out. And I'm literally recording everything, and was not recording this one. I really wish I was. Hits it. I mean, it was right at it. Took two bounces and slam dunked in.
Mm.
It was so I said, but do you really call that?
I was excited.
It was awesome. We went nuts. But I mean, the one hole that dude didn't tee off. Is it really a hole out eagle? Is it?
So, well, technically, I only hit it twice, you know. So
that is true. But it's a funny story. I'm going to tell everybody that this guy.
I have a good one. That's about one of my favorite hole in one stories. It does not involve me at all, but it involves one of my buddies, and he is out playing Bandon Dunes with a couple of his friends, older guys, and his foursome. They tee off on the first hole. They play the first hole. And the second hole, if you're familiar with Bandon Dunes, is a par three. And they've since done some changes to it, but there's a bowl in like the back left, and the pin was in this bowl, but you can't see, it kind of dips down below. And so you can't really see the bottom of the cup, but you can see the pin there. And they all, I think Ben, my buddy, hit a shot in the middle of the green. He's a great player. So let's just say he's in the middle of the green. The other two guys he's playing with both flag it. They hit it like right at the hole, and they're like, oh, that's, you know, those are good. But you assume you just get up there and you see the two balls. So they get up there, they find Ben's in the middle of the green, and there's one ball that's like a foot from the hole, and they can't see the other one. And they're like, oh my gosh. And so they go up there. One of them's in the hole. So they go up and they're like, you know, looking to see who it is. Guy pulls it out. It's Titleist two. He's like, I was playing a Titleist two.
Oh no.
And those, they had both bought brand new balls in the pro shop, Titleist 2, Pro V1X. I don't know if the Titleist 2 was accurate, but there was no way to discern whose balls was whose. And the fun part about this whole story is that under the rules of golf, if you can't identify your golf ball, you have to consider the both lost balls. And so they both had to go back to the tee and hit their third shot. I don't know if they actually did go back. I think so. So one of those guys has got a hole in one that they can't count.
In mini golf as a kid, you learn not to have the same ball as somebody else.
Yeah.
And so, then they teach you to have a different ball. You have a blue ball, a green ball, or like you have.
Yeah, mark your ball, man. If you're using the same ball, mark that thing.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
It's a crazy story.
So back to the tour. Tell me a little bit about this RGV and all the keepsakes you got inside, man. I saw some videos and those are dope, dude.
It's been decommissioned. The tour's over and it's been decommissioned. We're selling it, and all the swag has been removed. But that was by far my little project, my most fun sort of like side hustle was gathering. You guys can see the pencils. Those are pencils from my first tour. But I got a little something from every course that I went to. I got a scorecard, a pencil, and a ball mark, and you can kind of see some of the other stuff. It's all since moved it into my apartment here in Laguna Beach, but I would grab a little something from every place that I went to, and I just started covering the walls, and it ended up pretty much every square inch was covered with either stickers or ball marks or these little little wooden signs or just any sort of thing, the little putting cups from some signs by the sea. I just decorated the entire inside of that thing. So it was fun when people would come in, you know, I'd give them the ball mark and
it was
you
like
know,
a museum.
Anybody listening, go like check out YouTube. And if you just search Patrick Koenig, you'll see his RGV and thing is sick. It was awesome. It really is.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, well, he did live in there for a year. So, I mean,
the fun thing is that with each one of those, and so they're all kind of on the walls and in my face every day, you can kind of look at them and then you remember that day that it was like, oh, I remember that day in Boston, you know, George Wright, that mark there. And the guys that I played with, a couple of strangers, you know, that was a fun one. And so you kind of go down and each day is each one of those little marks is a memory. And that made it really kind of a cool, special thing and a great place to live for a year.
I have one more question, if Anthony grants me.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely. Take your time.
You held up physically pretty well over the year. Would you do it again? Could you do it all over?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was the greatest year of my life. You know, I would absolutely do it again. I don't know if I will, since I've done it now, but it was just so much fun.
What if somebody like myself were to break that record 2 years from now, would you be inclined to have to go out and reclaim it?
Ooh, that's it. I would love to watch somebody do it, you know, to go on that same sort of thing. Okay. So I invite anybody the thing is, it's like, first off, you got to have a year and you got to have the, you know, the funds to do this and just the desire.
Yeah.
It's challenging. I don't think it's like, if you just say that you're going to do it, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to pull it off. And so that is, it would be interesting to see somebody break it. And, you know, I don't know if somebody's going to say, hey, let's turn this into a thing and cover the cost again. It'd be hard for me to say, no, I'd have to, you know, I've got a girlfriend and
if somebody needs a team that you got as well, you know, generate a team that you had to help them along the way. And tell me about your team that you had.
I would do it differently. Not much differently. I would, if we do it again, I'd be like, let's turn this into much more of like a story. And I'd think we definitely had some videos and content. There was content from everywhere I went in terms of golf course photography, but it would be, I think we could do more with like the YouTube and the video and the storytelling aspect so people could follow along. I think that's one thing that I would change is just having a video crew to document like the day in and day out. And then you just drop a new episode every week or two. And then people could follow along and really understand what that was like, you know, how much golf it was, the effort that it took to plan all this stuff, just the photography, the social media, all that sort of thing. There was no, it wasn't like it was downtime. People are like, oh yeah, I bet you're just watching Netflix. And I was like, I'm absolutely not watching Netflix. I'm planning, I'm following up with emails. I'm driving. I just played 36 holes. I got 2 hours to the next course. I've got to keep 2 weeks out of tee time. So I've got 20 emails that I need to respond to with people. And all those people have times as well. They have lives. And so you got to piece all that together and get your route dialed in. Absolutely. So I always say it could have been, I mean, I did all that stuff myself. So I say that it could have been it was a 5-person job really, if you wanted to crush it. And, there'd be the golfer, the guy that just plays it. Then you'd have your photographer, videographer, you'd have a social media.
I'm really, with what we're doing, in my Instagram page, I want to do a lot of, you know, golf video creating and, especially our Cape Cod trips. And, I think that's a great idea to document, you know, more the YouTube videos, because I'm a big YouTube watcher and I like watching just everyday golfers, not necessarily the PGA or LIV, just, you know, going on and just seeing the average guy hack around. And that's an amazing idea, man. When you go, you definitely, if you go do it again, you should definitely, do that thing, the YouTube thing you were talking about, because
yeah, it takes some effort. I mean, anybody that does video and video editing knows that it's not, there was no way I could have done the bandwidth. It'll take a couple hours at a minimum to edit a good YouTube video. And if you're looking for 30 minutes of content, yeah, that's an effort. And that was something I just straight up didn't have time to do. So you need a crew to come in, and we had some great folks come along, and, you know, the news people put together some great pieces. And then we had some cool content from, you know, Golf Gamebook brought in a couple video teams along the way. So there was certainly not a lack of content there, but like, I think it would have been like, if they were to have, you know, we do like a Netflix quality documentary on the thing, I think it would have been really cool. I'd have loved to watch it.
Just, oh, that's absolutely, Netflix should be knocking at your door for this one, man. They really should be.
They should have been.
Well, there's, and the thing is, it's like the world of video production is a crowded one at this point in time.
There's nothing saying that you can't still do the story and, you know, have Netflix rewrite it for you, and you're, you know, you're just
I think a lot of the magic moments, I mean, the tour
was get them. That's
what you need, is you need to have, you know, me waking up on the bus and eating cereal, you know, all the time, and kind of talking about the breakdowns of the RGV. So
you don't want an actor playing you, and
if they want to hire, you know, Brad Pitt to play myself.
Well, you're a very good looking man. You know?
I would green light it if they're going to recreate the whole thing, but we're certainly not searching for that. And I'm very happy with the exposure and just kind of how the whole thing shook out. And we had some great stuff at the end. The CNN piece was fantastic. And the Wall Street Journal was my favorite article written on the tour. That came out right as I finished on my birthday, January 4th. And as I was done driving back down to Southern California, everybody I knew texted me. We were the front page of the Wall Street Journal. I had my mustache going. I sent them a picture, not even thinking. I just sent them a bunch of photos, and they used the one of me where I had my mustache in November. And that made it on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, which is not the front page, but the front page of the sports section.
That's awesome.
And just some great words from Jason Gay, who does great sports and humor writing. And that was a treat, you know, stuff. So like stuff like that is fantastic, but you always kind of look at like, what else could we have done? And that one kind of, you know, a video documentary along the way would have been cool.
Absolutely. Well, I want to start wrapping things up. And one of the things I like to do at the end is throw out five quick questions, quick answers, just random golf questions, especially a scratch golfer. I want to, you know, hear what you have to say.
Okay.
Fire away. All right. Favorite club and bag.
Oh, it's got to be the putter. Putter.
So that leads to this question, mallet putter or blade putter?
Yeah, it's a mallet. It's a Toulon Portland. It's one of the OGs too. So I think one was with the Toulon design on there before it got the second revision. I think they upped the Odyssey marketing. Somebody told me the other day it was a valuable putter because of that. But I'm not selling it. You know, it's worth, it's my best bud.
Definitely. Music or no music?
It depends. I'll go with both. You know, there's something about first out and just listening to the sounds in the morning, the birds chirping and stuff can be very peaceful. And then there's times where you got your buddies and you're like, let's put on the tunes. So I'm down for both.
All right. This next question, I think I know the answer to, because you kind of have to be with what you did. Ready golf or traditional rules?
Oh, ready golf, man. I don't like the traditional rules at all. Like, I mean, if somebody makes an eagle, you kind of give them the tee, or if there's a birdie, but like, I jumped plenty of birdies. Plenty of people jumped my birdies. We're just playing ready golf. I mean, I don't take long to play. My fastest round of golf on the tour was 53 minutes.
Wow.
And you know, I've definitely played some 5.5 hour rounds on there, but that was not because of me.
Absolutely.
That was other people being not ready golf.
Yes.
Right. And what is your ball of choice?
Geez, you know, I like, that's a good question, because there's a lot of good golf balls out there. I mean, I think the Pro V is, that's the gold standard, right?
Right.
But you know, I played a lot with the Chrome Softs. I like the TP5X. Like I'm not particular to the ball, but you can tell the difference in some of those at a scratch level. And, but those premier balls all kind of behave the same, at least for me, touch around the greens and stuff. And then there's some, you know, the Vice ball is great. You know, it's like, it's, you know, even the Kirklands are pretty decent. And there's a lot of those kind of, I don't know, they're the premium discount balls, if lack of a better term. And that's what's cool about golf, is that those didn't used to be the case. Options were limited, and now everybody is kind of got a chance to create a golf brand and bring something in. And so it's cool to see that you got some premium lower cost options for the everyday golfer there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I lose a dozen around. So I go for, yeah. I treat myself when I go on trips, and I'll treat myself to some Pro Vs, but I can't afford them at my level. That's for damn sure.
Right. Right.
Well, Patrick, we really appreciate you coming on, hanging with us. You're a cool ass dude. I knew yes. you were going to be just from watching your videos. You're my hero with how much golf you play, man. It's that's just what we love. Listen, number one is my family and kids. Number two is golf.
There you go. That's it's a good priority list.
It is, dude. That's it, man. And we really appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you? Do you want to give any plugs?
Yeah, I got to give a shout out to my guy, Stewie. Stewie was my remote caddy, and that dude was the Q follow from Stewart Golf. And he followed me everywhere I went this past year. And my other sponsors, the fun and colorful polos that I wore, breakfast balls, those guys are awesome. I mean, they're great apparel, but like I'm always a fan of working with brands I love. The team over there is super fun and super supportive. And so I always like to you know, give the love to the people that make this game great and creative and fun. And breakfast balls was certainly that. And then I might've had a lot more blisters on my feet if I hadn't been rocking my Echo golf shoes. Those were my sponsors. And so this doesn't really happen without those guys in tow. And so those people made it special. And yeah, my website, pjkoenig.com, is where you can find pretty much everything. And that links to my various social media, PJ Koenig on Instagram and Patrick J. Koenig on Twitter, is where I share stuff on there pretty much daily.
Yeah, everyone needs to follow your Instagram page because the pictures are absolutely phenomenal. They really are. It's, I'm not just saying it because you're on here. I think the pictures are just some of the. I'm going to show Brett. Brad doesn't have social media. He's one of those guys that has zero social media.
Good for you. Good for you.
I got to get on. I'm going to get on and show. I'm going to show him right now all your pictures because they're absolutely incredible.
I did see some on some of the pieces, and they are remarkable. I do outline my cubicle at work with golf photos of different holes.
So you're going to have to get hooked up with some of those.
I'm going to have to look at some of the credits on some of those photos. You might be in some of those categories.
Yeah, well, I certainly have seen a lot, and it's a joy to be on the show. It's a joy to share the photography, and thanks for letting me tell my story.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Pat. Really, we really appreciate you, Patrick, man. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in and listening to another episode of the Upstate Golf Guys podcast. See you next time.
Thanks, America.
Happy, the ball itself has its own energy, or life force, if you will. Its natural environment is in the home. So why don't you send them home? His bags are packed. He's got his airplane.